and Electrolytes, preceded by Men at Work and Overkill. That's 4 minutes past eight, the Full English Breakfast Show. A super enzyme that degrades plastic bottles 6 times faster than before has been created by scientists and could be used for recycling within a year or two. Maybe hope for the war on plastic after all. The super enzyme, which is derived from bacteria that naturally evolved the ability to eat plastic, enables the full recycling of bottles. As scientists believe, combining with enzymes that break down cotton could also allow mixed fabric clothing to be recycled. Today, as we know, millions of tons of such clothing and plastics is either dumped in landfill or incinerated. Plastic pollution has contaminated the entire planet from the Arctic to the deepest oceans, and people are now known to consume and breathe microplastic particles. It's currently very difficult to break down plastic bottles into their chemical constituents in order to make new ones from old, meaning more new plastic has been created from oil each year. The super enzyme was engineered by linking two separate enzymes, both of which were found in the plastic eating bug discovered at a Japanese waste site in 2016. Researchers revealed an engineered version of the first enzyme in 2018, which started breaking down the plastic in a few days, but the super enzyme gets to work 6 times faster. Professor John McGeehan at the University of Portsmouth said when we linked the enzymes rather unexpectedly, we got a dramatic increase in activity. This is a trajectory towards trying to make faster enzymes that are more industrially relevant, but it's also one of the stories about learning from nature and then bringing us into the lab. Some clever people around.
Very clever.
There's so much plastic around. It's terrible.
It's the masks that you see lying around, which is quite frightening.
It's just terrible. I mean, yeah, look, now I do admit that on one occasion I opened my car door and the mask that I keep in the side panel pocket there fell out. I noticed it and picked it up. So I can understand, you know, a few people sort of not deliberately discarding the masks, but there's a lot of people just chucking them around willy-nilly, which is...
Have you noticed that people that wear masks on their own in the car... They're the same people that don't indicate at roundabouts.
Oh, really? Yeah. I hadn't noticed that.
I've been doing a little study.
Yes, I don't subscribe to actually wearing a mask inside your car when you're on your own, but...
No, I've just noticed that those that do don't indicate either.
There's still a lot of people walking around with the masks, but not with their noses covered up as well.
Yes.
But so the prefect of the Almaracin was speaking last night, and masks are still de rigueur in public places.
Mm-hmm.
And the gym's closing down as well.
Yes, they are.
Which puts place in my fitness plans. Can't even have a sauna. I'm sure that coronavirus can't survive inside a sauna. Still, those are the rules. Right, what have you got up your sleeve this morning then?
No, I haven't made it too difficult.
You
I think you'll be
say
okay.
That.
Well, no, you're very good. You're very. On an overall basis. Question number
Thank
one.
You.
These twin brothers from English pop band were born on
Bros.
This day. Yes,
Matt
well done.
Matt and Luke Goss.
In 1968, they reunited for their 30th anniversary in 2016. Tell me their number one single.
When Will I Be Famous?
No,
Drop
1988.
The Boy.
No.
I don't know.
Well, I owe you nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Question number two. On this day in 1984, Prince and the Revolution started a 2-week run at number one on the US singles chart with which single?
Kiss.
No.
A Raspberry Beret.
It was his second US number one and number seven, hit in the UK. It was the opening track on both the album and the film Purple Rain.
When Doves Cry.
No.
1999.
No, you've had enough. That's it. Let's go crazy.
All right.
And finally, on this day in 1997, Robbie Williams released his first solo album, Life Through a Lens, which features which single, which was released in December of the same year. It was Williams' best-selling single and voted the best song
Angels.
Over the last 25 years. Well done at the Brit Awards in 2005. And did you know that in a poll in 2005, it was voted by Britons as the song they most wanted played at their funerals?
Really?
I want Don't Stop Me Now.
Because you're having a good time.
Yeah, by Queen, just in case.
Another one bites the dust. 9:10, the Full English Breakfast Show. We're very fortunate to have some experts on hand to, tell us about the ramifications of Brexit, what we need to do before it happens on the 31st of December. Tracy Leonette has been in to explain the residency permits implications, and also those of you trying to go for French nationality, how to go about doing that. And really pleased to have Rob Kaye from Blevins Franks in this morning to talk about the financial aspects. Hi, Rob.
Hi. You well?
Yeah, you must have been so busy over the last few months.
And not just last few months. It sort of happened that there was a hiatus for 3 months after the Brexit vote, and since then it's just been whistle stop since.
Yeah. And, well, I think now it's actually going to happen. People need to get their house in order. And, you know, prevarication is a very popular thing. So I suppose a lot of people haven't really started to think about it properly yet.
I think the difficulty this year has also obviously been the pandemic. And people have come out to the end of the pandemic, having maybe spent time during the pandemic thinking about what they should be doing with the finances. They've come out the other side and they've then thought, oh, what are we going to do now? We need to move quickly. And also, you know, there was a website that was due to open up for people to apply for their withdrawal agreement, carte de séjour, that was supposed to set up on the 1st of July. That was put back to October, and last week it was pushed back to mid-October. So it's starting to push the dates back, and there's quite a lot of confusion about when people should be arriving, because you've got to actually be in France for 3 months before technically you can apply. Or if you're able to arrive with an S1 out of the UK, you've actually got to be here for 3 months before you can submit it to the French health authorities. So it's all getting really confused, really getting squashed towards the end of the year.
Yes, administrative problems are mounting. I was just reading that people applying for French nationality, the prefecture of Nice is still dealing with applications from 2017. So anybody applying now could probably be wasting 3 or 4 years before it actually happens.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I'm mindful of the fact that I don't think the deadline will end up being the 30th of June. I think they're going to have to push it back because they just don't think they're going to be able to cope.
Well, does that depend on what happens in Brussels to some extent? Because, you know, Sarah was saying in the news that there are signs that they may be inching towards a deal, but it's not cut and dried. And, of course, the big bugbear is this internal market bill going through Parliament.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday there was an announcement that they're getting close to being able to come up with a consolidated legal text. Now, I don't exactly know what that means, but it does feel like we're itching towards both sides maybe coming towards some sort of compromise.
Right, but I mean, if that does happen, there is a deal. Presumably that means on goods and services, but it will have to mean that the Northern Irish border situation is sorted out, fisheries, and also state subsidies. Those are the three main issues.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know what you think, Rob, but I just don't think all that will be able to be done in the next 3 months.
Right, so they're going to have a sort of a broad brushstrokes agreement and hammer out the details at a later date.
I think that can be the only way. I don't think that, unless they have something in place by the end of October, there's just no way there's enough time to get things through.
You don't think citizens' rights are going to be affected if they can't agree on everything?
No, I think it's a difficult one, because if you're here before the end of the year, you've arrived within the withdrawal agreement period. So therefore, you know, one of the big issues that lots of people are asking us at the moment is, oh dear, you know, I'm only arriving probably in November. I'm not going to be here 3 months before the end of the year. And people are getting confused between the residency rules in the UK and the residency rules in France. You know, in France, they take a different approach. It's not based on number of days. It's where your foyer is. So if you actually arrived in France and you are here, that you're putting your roots down. And you simply then apply after you've gone through the period.
But if the British government is prepared to break international law by ripping up parts of the withdrawal agreements pertaining to the border down the Irish Sea, what's to stop the EU ripping up their side of the agreements as well?
I think it's... I haven't got an answer for that, Ron. No. I agree with you. I'm hoping that both sides are playing an element of brinkmanship.
Yes, and we quite often sort of have last-minute deals in sort of darkened rooms in Brussels, don't we?
Yeah, but the problem with this is if there's an 11th-hour deal, it's going to affect so many people, just not going to have enough time to get everything done before. So an 11th-hour deal would be nice, but I just don't think it's the answer.
Yeah, I mean, if it was a Labour government running the operation, they'd be sending out for beer and sandwiches at this point. But enough of that. Let's talk about banking, first of all, because the alarm has been raised over the last few weeks with many UK retail banks saying they were going to stop offering bank accounts to people living in the EU who have accounts in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, it makes great headlines as well, doesn't it? You know, I think the first time I saw it on a paper in France was across Connections. And then clients have started to receive letters. It's not every bank, OK? We need to understand that when the UK was in or one of the 28 members of the EU, and working on the basis now that it's during the withdrawal agreement, so there's only 27 there, but while they're in the 28, there were special rules put in place for a single market for financial services, and that's what any company in those 28 areas can passport into with very little regulation apart from making sure that everything's right in one country. So you could be passported into every country. So that was setting tablets of stone. And that will continue, but obviously not for the UK because it's going to be outside. Now, the problem is that if UK banks want to deal with clients who are in France, Spain, Portugal, Italy, they're actually going to have to meet the regulation in each of those countries. So therefore, they've got to negotiate individually. Now, there's quite a lot of banks. I won't name any in particular at the moment, but there's two or three that have broken cover and actually said that they're not prepared to do it. There was one bank in particular who actually made it known that across the EU, they've actually got 13,000 clients. Now, 13,000 sounds like a big number, but actually, if you spread it across the whole of Europe and then you compare that to what they've got in the UK, it's a really minor amount. You know, do they want to go to the expense? Is it actually profitable for their shareholders to go to the expense to make sure they can still operate in those countries when actually it's not going to be profitable for them at all, so there's no point. You know, there's one particular firm who sold out a few years ago. It was being negotiated before Brexit, but it completed. So they are no longer in France. And that same firm in the UK has sent letters out to many of their clients in France saying that their Visa cards will stop. And they've actually given them a date of the 11th of November. So there's lots of variance between different banks. But it really comes down to the fact that they are in no man's land. And if it goes to the other side of the 1st of January, it could cost them an awful lot of money just to keep the accounts open.
Unless there is a deal, in which case passporting would be maintained and the whole thing would be sort of brushed under the carpet, as it were.
Potentially, yes. Certainly if there is a passport, but it will be unprecedented because the UK would be a third nation and there's no third nation who is able to passport into the EU. Now, the only people who can are banks who are in the EEA. But anyone who's a third nation, it would be very unprecedented.
Okay, is it all accounts that are going to be affected or just certain types? I mean, for example, credit cards and debit cards and normal checking accounts and whether you have an address in the UK that you're using or whether your address is registered in France?
Yeah, it's a difficult one because I've read lots of the blogs and seen lots of the articles about people using UK addresses. Strictly speaking, what you're supposed to use with your UK bank is your actual residential address, because the banks have all got reporting requirements back to the authorities where you are a resident. So there's, strictly speaking, you might have an account in the UK, but actually, if you are a French resident, you should be using your French address. Now, going back to the point you made a few minutes ago, Rob, it's not all bank accounts, yeah? We're in a situation where people have been told that they will potentially lose their credit cards, and there's been noises about a couple of banks actually closing accounts for the reasons I mentioned a few minutes ago. But in the main, lots of banks have said that they will be able to keep credit, checkbooks open. Now, will you be able to have a credit card? I don't think so, because we then start getting into compliance areas, because money laundering becomes a big issue. If you're living in France and you're clearing your UK credit card off from outside of the UK, the UK bank doesn't know the origin of the funds, so therefore they potentially are very vulnerable to some abuse. And for that reason, just from a pure risk point of view, I can see credit cards for French residents being more difficult to maintain.
When do you think we'll get some clarity on this?
The million-dollar question. I'm hoping before the end of the month, because, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of the banks the banks that have broken cover, I think they've broken cover because they've now decided they're getting close to the edge, so they need to put people on notice. I mean, as a firm, we've been absolutely staggered by the lack of focus of UK banks, UK financial services companies, and even UK fund managers. It seems to be, I mentioned this in the broadcast on Sunday, it seems to be that quite a lot of them have buried their heads in the sand, hoping, expecting, whatever you want to call it, that Brexit isn't going to happen and there's going to be some sort of get-out-of-jail-free card. And I think they're all waking up now to the fact that, oh, we're too close to the edge here. We're going to have to make some plans.
So Brexit is happening, there's no get-out-of-jail-free card, and we're not going to stay in the customs union under any circumstances.
I think I agree with you there, yes.
Rob Kay from Blevins Franks is with us this morning. And Rob, we come on to the transfer of UK assets. And when we say assets, so we're meaning both money and property as well. So should people really now be thinking about moving their UK assets into France if they're resident here?
I wouldn't necessarily say into France. Maybe into Europe is a better description for that. And it's also, you know, it's difficult. You mentioned property then. You can't move a property into the UK, and you also then need to take advice on the reason why you're doing it. It may be that, let's say, you have a property in the UK, you want to keep it because you want to use it when you go back as a boat hull, or actually you want to give your kids a property at some point in the future. There's no real reason to sell it or to transfer it elsewhere. You physically can't with the property. But I mean, if you're a French resident, anyone who listens to the broadcast on Sunday will know that there are special rules. You will come under the French rules with regard to capital gains tax, even if it's a UK property. And they are, overall, they are less penal, I believe, than the UK. When we start talking about money, it is slightly different. It does get more complicated. You're moving, you know, in the UK, you can transfer assets between spouses and there's no tax, whereas from a French point of view, even if the money's in the UK and you're living in France, if you transfer it between spouses, potentially you're walking into a tax problem. So you need to be really careful. I can't see that there will be any restrictions on transferring monies because, you know, an American or an Australian can transfer monies from there into France or into the EU. You may have to jump over a few more hurdles, but I think most Brits who are living in France are now accepting that they're going to have to be a little bit more involved in the bureaucracy and jump through a few more hoops.
But generally speaking, if you say you're going to take advantage of the withdrawal agreement and move to France before the end of the year, so you're in the process of selling your primary property in the UK and relocating to France, is that going to be affected in any way if the sale hasn't gone through before the end of the year?
No, because under the rules in both countries, it's your primary residence. So therefore, we have to remember that the double tax treaty is not being replaced and isn't being thrown out just because the UK has left the EU. It's between France and the UK. So the rules that are in place will cover those eventualities.
And that covers inheritance as well?
To a certain extent, yeah. I mean, there are different rules on either side of the channel. In fact, that's the subject matter of Sunday's broadcast, where we're going to talk about the difference between French taxation and UK taxation and the fact that it's probably got the same name, but actually the tax treatment and the way it's calculated and everything is completely different.
So that double tax agreement between France and the UK will stay in place despite Britain leaving the EU then?
Absolutely.
OK. Mentioned the possibility of capital controls. You don't seem to think that's going to happen, but I mean, it has been mentioned in quite a few places. I mean, could the UK government decide to impose capital controls at some point to prevent money flooding out of the UK?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt it's on the agenda. I don't see it high on the agenda at the moment because they're trying to make sure that everything's as palatable as possible. You know, one step towards that, we saw last week that they've cancelled the November budget. So they've kicked that into the long grass. Now, one of the things we were concerned about was changes in that budget, which would then become effective on the 1st of January. Now, on the basis there isn't a budget, I don't think capital exchange controls or anything like that will actually happen for the 1st of January. I just think that they're leaving things as flexible as possible now as we move toward this different phase of the negotiations, which won't antagonise either party and leave things a bit more malleable.
So you're saying that Brexit hasn't really happened then?
No, I am saying it's definitely happened. We're only in the withdrawal period,
yes.
Yeah? So the transition period.
The negotiations are going to go on for years after the transition period, aren't they?
Yeah, but I think if they came up with if they agreed a deal today, the actual details of it, that would go on for years. You know, there's somebody going to start counting fish every time they pull it over a net at some point, haven't they?
Mm. Unfortunately, fish don't respect national borders, though, do they? So
that's unfortunate, isn't it?
So can you actually see a softening of the positions the further this goes down the line as kind of fatigue starts to set in between the two sides and think, oh, hell, you know, let's just make things as simple as possible?
I don't think they can make things as simple as possible, Rob, but I do see that they are softening slightly because I think both sides do not want, in the current environment we've got, with the economic conditions that have been as a result of the pandemic and the claw and the shutdown and the potential second wave, and I read something this morning about a third wave. With all those things on the horizon, I just think that there's a little bit more sense being spoken, and a little bit more sense is coming into the discussion. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's a softening, because there's some quite hard opinions on both sides. But I think there is a meeting of minds of going, OK, look, we need something which is a working situation to begin with, which won't mean we're just both jumping off the cliff edge together.
Vince Franks is with us this morning. So I guess the days of loading your boots up with booze and driving it over the channel are going to be coming to an end then, Rob.
I think there'll be a lot more restrictions, yes.
But so Duty Free is coming back.
Yep.
Mm.
You're not a fan then?
Well, I think I preferred the sort of loading your boots up with a beer and wine and driving it across the channel. I mean, provided you weren't sort of going to sell it on to somebody else on the other side.
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about passporting, and if you're using a UK advisor, they're probably going to become next to useless if you're living in France after the 1st of January.
I wouldn't use the word useless. I think they're all they're all very well qualified, Rob.
Yes.
But to actually give you advice on your financial situation as a French resident, we've had this problem for years. Yeah, UK advisors have continued to provide advice to French residents, and in the main, that's because lots of Brits who arrive here who are very, very familiar with what they had in the UK have continued to have it. You know, typically in the UK, there used to be PEPs and they were replaced by ISAs. And lots of people who arrive here, they continue to hold their ISA. Now, there's nothing wrong with holding your ISA, and there won't be anything wrong post the withdrawal agreement, post the transition period for keeping an ISA. But actually, you need to understand that in the UK, it's tax-free, whereas in France, it isn't. And even the gains that accrued before you arrived in France will be liable to tax if it's then in cash when you're in France. Now, a lot of those subtleties are lost on UK advisors. And we're now getting to the stage where we're actually working with a lot of UK advisors who are actually asking for assistance. And one of the things that we did a few weeks ago is came up with a checklist, which is actually a checklist that really... It helps your UK advisor, because it gives you 10 questions that you ask your UK advisor. And actually, at the end of the 10 questions, you've taken them on a journey. If they can't answer those 10 questions, they really can't be advising you. And so many people have turned around, I'm saying UK advisors have turned around after reading the list and going, you know what, actually, I shouldn't be giving advice here because I'm just not qualified to do it. So anyone who's interested in the checklist, we are more than happy to supply it. Send an email to riviera@blevinsfranks.com or find out about Blevins Franks on the website, where you can also ask for the checklist.
What about those who live in France but pay tax in the UK? How's their situation going to change?
You're getting really deep now, Rob. I mean, it's...
Well, it's quite a few people who commute. Absolutely. You know, they go up to London on the Monday and come back on the Friday.
Yeah, yeah. If you're working in the UK, you will continue to pay tax in the UK. You have to make a French tax return, but on the French tax return, you can offset the tax which is paid in the UK. There's not, as I said before, because of the double tax treaty, there's nothing going to change with that. That comes under the UK-France double tax treaty, so you can still do it. The difficulty is when you've got people, especially now with the pandemic and people working from home, they actually may not be driving or flying or going on the train back to the UK to actually do the work. So the work then happens in France. Now we start to get into really difficult territory, because actually then, that then becomes, if it's your business, it potentially becomes a French company, not a UK operation. If you're employed, potentially then it drags your UK employers into paying French social charges and all the things that go along with that. Now, I'm sure that a number of UK employers, if they knew that that's what they were being exposed to, given the amount of social charges French employers we all know pay, I think a few of them could be having kittens, especially at this moment in time when finances are, let's say, a bit tight.
OK, I mean, you can't be tax resident in more than one country, though, can you?
No, you can be a tax resident in more than one country.
You can,
just,
OK.
Yeah, but you just don't pay the tax. Most countries have got a double tax treaty, yeah? So, I mean, if you're living in France but you're doing the work in the UK, yeah, you'll continue to be paid out of the UK if it's an employee contract, and you'll pay tax there. And in fact, you'll pay national insurance there as well. Now, you won't pay it in France, but that doesn't mean to say you don't qualify as a French tax resident. And you'll put a tax return in, and then you'll get a tax credit for the tax that should have been paid in France. And as I said, that won't change after the transition period.
And the 180-day rule will still apply after the 1st of January as well?
The 180, are you talking from a UK point of view or a French point?
Talking
of view?
From a UK point of view.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot tighter than that. The statutory residence rules in the UK now dictate that if you can't spend 180 days in the UK every year and still be non-resident. So you've got to be really careful about the statutory residence rules. But obviously, after the transition period, if you are not a resident of France, you can only spend 90 days in France in any 180. So you're going to have to go back to the UK.
Sounds very, very complicated.
No, it is. It's a minefield that you've got to find your way through. And there's the great thing for Blevins Francs is that you've got to have a plan now. Whereas before, or even at the moment, until the end of the year, you can simply come and go as you want.
Mm.
Whereas after, you're going to have to be very careful about what you do because, you know, we're now in a situation where technology has moved on, yeah? And where people before didn't expect Big Brother to be watching them, it's watching them all the time now. If you think that when you go through an airport and your passport's being scanned, it's not going into a central computer, I think you're kidding yourself. And then if you're then spending too many days in the UK, I'm sure that you'll start to potentially get a letter dropping onto through the letterbox.
Okay. We were mentioning Tracy Leonetti earlier, and there's an online conference coming up on the 9th of October about relocating to France, and all the profits are going to a charity that supports abused and neglected children, and Blevins Francs is involved in that as well, so it's certainly worth getting involved in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, with any of these webinars, they really are important. They're giving you great information, which is pertinent, which in most cases is prompted by questions that are coming up all the time. And as you said yourself earlier on, things are changing. So Mike Marsden will be involved in that conference, as well as UK lawyers and French tax experts, and there's a French accountant involved. So Tracy's pulled all these skills together, and this webinar will go out on the 9th of October, which I think is next Friday, isn't it?
Is it? God, you're really up with the lingo on your webinars. I said online seminars.
No, you see, in the last 6 months, I've ended up getting involved in all these things.
Yes, it is the 9th of October, and you can get further details if you go to Tracy Leonetti's Facebook page. Anything else to add, Rob, before we let you go?
No, I think that it's the same as we've been banging on about in the broadcast every Sunday. I think now people need to actually take action. You know, we're getting to the final throes, and it's going to happen. You know, I'm absolutely sure it's going to happen. I'm not convinced that there will be an extension to passporting because the UK will be out of the EU and it's then going to be a third country. So to create some sort of passport, I think is going to be difficult because it'll be something that's completely new. Yeah, and I think that you may find that your banking arrangements stay in place for checkbooks and current accounts. And, you know, interestingly, anyone who's got an offshore version of a UK bank, their offshore version of the account, today, that's not to say that we won't, but to date, we haven't seen anyone receiving letters who've got that type of account. So anyone who's concerned or received the letter, it might be worth your while checking out if you've got alternatives, because I realise that many Brits want to keep a sterling-denominated account, and that's not that easy in France. So all I would say is, the time for procrastinating and dithering, I think, is quickly coming to an end. So you need to get your act together.
And if you've got a UK bank account just because it's convenient, but you don't really need it, just get rid of it and file it, put everything into your European account.
Yeah, absolutely.
So contact your bank, ask your UK financial advisor a list of 10 questions, which is available from you, and just get ready, basically.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for coming in.
You're very welcome.
Talk to you soon.
See you soon.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online. This is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Lyser has the top stories across the Riviera.
The 2020 Cannes Film Festival is set to return to the Croisette in October. A mini-selection of part of the official Cannes 2020 selection will be screened from the 27th to the 29th. The event, postponed in May due to COVID-19, will offer the general public the opportunity to attend four premieres of films from the 2020 official selection. In other news, faced with an increasing number of COVID-19 patients, hospitals in Marseille have started to postpone operations. The move comes as all bars and restaurants in Marseille and Aix-en-Provence were forced to close following new regulations in the fight against the spread of the coronavirus. Hospital staff have, however, announced that there are no plans as of yet to transfer patients to the Paris region. 177 COVID patients were hospitalised on Monday in Marseille, meaning that more than half of the intensive care beds are now occupied by COVID patients. That's 50 out of the 90 beds, and about 100 nurses and doctors have been recruited, with many more still needed. Meanwhile, in the Alpes-Maritimes, Monday evening saw the introduction of new restrictions, with bars having to close at 10 p.m. and restaurants as well as bars offering snacks at 12:30. The local authorities of Antibes Juan-les-Pins have released its weekly update of coronavirus patients in hospital. In the week of September the 21st to the 27th, there were 13 hospitalised coronavirus patients, 3 patients in intensive care and 1 death, which was the first since May the 28th. Meanwhile, the mayor of Cannes, David Lisnard, has said that there has been an improvement in health data in the Alpes-Maritimes, especially in the west of the department. In a tweet, the mayor said that in 3 weeks, the incidence has dropped by 43 points, the positivity rate is decreasing, and the number of hospitalised cases is decreasing. He said that the goal is to make testing more efficient and effective, which makes it possible to prioritise and to better treat the disease and to meet the needs of economic and social activity. 2 new positive cases for COVID-19 have been reported on Monday in Monaco, bringing the total number of cases to 212 residents affected by the coronavirus. 11 patients are being treated at the Princess Grace Hospital, and 26 people are currently being followed by the Home Monitoring Centre. The mayor of Nice, Christian Estrosi, has announced extended coronavirus support measures for theatres in Nice. He said that as from this autumn, the city of Nice will buy tickets from theatres as well as for performances by theatre troupes and companies. He said that this would be in addition to measures already taken, such as the suspension of rents and compensation for losses, and various support measures would be extended into 2021. The measures were announced after the mayor held a meeting with representatives of local theatres on Monday. He also confirmed that the theatre festival will be going ahead from October the 5th to the 18th, and that further details would be made available on sanitary measures. In national news, France's finance minister Bruno Le Maire has announced that more than 4 million people in France have benefited from the exceptional bonus known as the Macron bonus. The premium, which is exempt up to a limit of €1,000 from income tax, employee and employer contributions, as well as social contributions, was described by Le Maire on Monday as effective, as he added that it had given back purchasing power to employees. Meanwhile, the social security deficit in France is expected to reach a record level of €44.7 billion this year. That's according to a summary of the Audit Commission. The previous record, reached in 2010 during the financial crisis, was €28 billion. The manufacturer of the famous Nutella spread, the Italian giant Ferrero, is set to invest €42 million in Normandy, where it plans to install a new logistics centre. According to a statement from the company, the work will start next November and will be completed at the end of 2021. Finally, France will today launch the allocation for the first 5G frequencies. Initially scheduled for April, but postponed due to the coronavirus pandemic, the auction will allow operators such as Orange, SFR, Bouygues Telecom and Free to acquire 11 blocks of frequencies that are currently unused and pave the way for first 5G services in some cities by the end of the year, bringing at least €2.17 billion to the state. The use of 5G has, however, been criticised by some politicians and NGOs who question the interest of this new technology, citing risks to health and the environment. Despite this, the French government has maintained its scheduled launch without waiting for a report from the National Health Security Agency, scheduled for March 2021. They stress that most of the advanced countries had already allocated these frequencies.
Riviera Radio, Sports News.
Football, there were 2 games in the English Premier League last night. Here are the details from BBC Sports. Are you listening, Sarah?
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello, I'm Andy Barwell at the BBC Sports Centre. The champions Liverpool made it 3 wins out of 3 to start the Premier League campaign. Jurgen Klopp's side were 3-1 winners over Arsenal, and the BBC's football correspondent John Murray was at the game at Anfield.
Even though Arsenal went ahead here, a scruffy goal it was, a series of missed kicks really, finished by Lacazette. But Liverpool, unbeaten at Anfield in the Premier League for almost 3.5 years, responded quickly with the equaliser in 147 seconds from Sadio Mane. Andy Robertson shot Liverpool in front before half-time. And in the second half, Lacazette had a big chance to make it 2-2, but Alisson made the save. Liverpool, though, were the better team. And on his home debut, his Premier League debut for his new club, substitute Diogo Jota finished it off with a goal in the 88th minute, and Liverpool won it by 3-1.
And Liverpool are second in the table behind Leicester City on goal difference. Aston Villa were 3-0 winners away at Fulham. The scorers were Jack Grealish, Conor Hourihan and Tyrone Mings. The Villa boss, Dean Smith, has seen his team go 8 games unbeaten, including 6 wins in a run stretching back to last season. And Smith was happy with how they played at Craven Cottage.
The players showed a great will to keep the ball out the back of the net, but also showed some great quality going forward as well. We've scored 3 good goals, the third one from a well-worked set piece, but a quality ball, quality run for the first, quality feet from Jack, and a really composed finish for the second. You know, could have scored more if our final decision had been better.
And for more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
You did go behind, though.
Did what, that first goal? Well, that's why, apparently, that's what Roy Keane was referring to, saying it was sloppy in parts, our defence with that first goal.
OK.
But you can't argue.
Don't argue with Roy Keane, whatever you do. Tennis, Rafael Nadal and Dominic Thiem are both through to the second round of the French Open, but the fourth seed Daniil Medvedev is out. Nadal beats Igor Gerasimov. Bulgarian. Let's have another go. Gerasimov in straight sets, while Thiem beats Marin Cilic 6-4, 6-3, 6-3. Medvedev lost to Marcin Fucsovics. In the women's event, Serena Williams made a slow start as she bids for a record-equalling 24th Grand Slam title before beating Kristi Ahn 7-6, 6-love. Rugby Union, there was one game in the Gallagher Premiership last night. Harlequins were beaten 32-23 at home by Wasps. It was the final match of the stoop for former England captain Chris Robshaw, who's leaving Harlequins at the end of the season. And in racing, the ground is described as being very soft ahead of this weekend's Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe in Paris. Heavy rain at Paris-Longchamp will give the horses a big challenge in the race, with Stradivarius, who won the Gold Cup at Ascot, thought to be among the better-placed contenders. Enable, who finished second on soft ground last year, may struggle in the conditions. 22 horses are left in the field for Europe's richest race.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Oyster, the world's finest blue water sailing yachts. Oyster Yachts. Beyond expectation.
For coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Amaral-Sebum and the Vaal, the general situation is weak. High pressure, 1,015 millibars over the region. Winds are variable, force 1 to 3. The sea is calm. Visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, 1,009 millibars. And the outlook for Wednesday, partially cloudy, force 1 to 3. Variable winds, calm seas and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are southwesterly, force 3 to 5. The sea is slight to moderate. Visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,008 millibars. And the outlook for Wednesday, mainly fine, force 3 to 5. Southwesterly winds, slight seas and good visibility.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Oyster, the world's finest blue water sailing yachts. Oyster Yachts, beyond expectation.
Riviera Radio, weather.
Mainly fine, light to moderate southeasterly winds, temperatures 22 degrees this afternoon, overnight lows 16 degrees on the coast, 14 degrees inland with clear skies Wednesday and Thursday, and mainly fine, highs of 21 to 22 degrees. If you want some awesome heat, head for Athens, 30 degrees there today. Finally.
What do your dreams say about you? From ending a relationship to losing your teeth, one expert has revealed the most common visions, what they really mean. So if you dream about falling and you're feeling out of control, separating from something or feeling unsafe, if you dream about dying, change is occurring, it's an end of a chapter or a phase in life. Losing your teeth, stress, anxiety and feeling like you're not in control. Chopping off your hair, I don't know whether you ever dreamt that. Change, making a big career decision. Being naked in public, that's self-esteem issues. Ending a relationship is stress in a relationship, mindset exploring response to a possible situation. If you dream that you're drowning, then you're feeling overwhelmed and not coping. And if you dream that you're being chased, then you've got lucky. No.
Pardon?
You're feeling frightened and fearing something or someone is escaping.
No, I don't dream any of that stuff.
Do you remember your dreams?
Sometimes. Mm. The only one I can really think of is falling, but that normally happens when you start falling asleep.
Yeah, well, it means you're feeling out of control.
Yeah, but that's the prerequisite for going under.
Oh, right, OK.
The difference between consciousness and subconsciousness.
Yeah, we don't necessarily always dream that you're falling,
no,
do you?
No, but that's all I can remember.
That's a part of your dream.
Yeah, it's actually quite a nice feeling.
OK.
As you sort of fall
into
the bed.
To sleep.